Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest this week, Tom Hopper, real quick, I'm touring. You can see me in just a couple of weeks at the House of Comedy in Minnesota, Bloomington, Minnesota. You can see me at the House of Comedy in Vancouver, Canada. You can see me at Go Bananas in Cincinnati, and I'm going to be in Texas as well. I'm all over the place. So go to paulmercurio.com, go to my website. All my links are there for different shows around the country. Hope you guys can make it out, see me. On a different note, what's annoying me lately is I'm constantly being asked to tip everybody. I get servers. They should be tipped. They're underpaid. Tip a delivery guy if he's got to carry a big, heavy thing into your house. Definitely. If you pour me a cup of coffee and smiling, I'm sorry, no tip. Okay. And don't spin the iPad around and then like put the tip in front of me. And then I feel like an ass for not tipping because then I won't tip. And then I start yelling and the coffee gets thrown in somebody's face and somebody gets arrested. But that's a story for another day. And when it comes to Uber, now it used to be, remember with Uber, you didn't have to tip. That was one of the attractions. Now they're always asking for tips at the end. And now again, I get it. But if I'm going to tip you because you're a good driver, I want to be tipped as an Uber passenger. So I think you should start asking for a tip if you're a good passenger. If you're a jerk, don't ask for one, okay? But get your rating, because they do rate us, by the way. They rate passengers. And if you have a bad rating, you won't get picked up. But now I want to be tipped. Or what we could do is, instead of me tipping you and you tipping me, driver, let's just call it even. How about that? And everybody's happy. So there's that. My guest this week, Tom Hopper from the Umbrella Academy, from Game of Thrones. Really cool conversation with him about how he got his start in acting. You know, his workout regimen and, you know, his, you know, amazing physique, much like my own. And just also really how he figured out, really interesting insight into how he figured out early on what his thing was as an actor that would allow him to stand out over other actors. So I really like these conversations because they really get you behind how a person approaches their career and the thought that goes into it. So really fun conversation with him, really great guy. So enjoy, Tom. Hope to see you on the road. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com, for tickets. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week has a terrific new movie out on Netflix. Tom Hopper. He's appeared in Percival and Merlin, Billy Bones and Black Sails. He's been in the Umbrella Academy, of course, Resident Evil, and he has a new movie out called Love in the Villa, which is out now. A little bit of a departure for him, I guess, romantic comedy. Great to have you on the show, Tom.
Thanks so much, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the movie that's out right now. It's, I guess, obviously it's a romantic comedy and little different than what you've been doing, which I'm assuming was a nice departure for you, a little something different to do and not have to worry about maybe working out all the time, I guess, and watching your diet in preparation, right?
Yeah, although I had a shirtless scene in this movie, so I had to be careful in Italy because there's a lot of pasta and pizza on the go over there. So, you know, I'd be a little bit careful. But no, a rom-com that was completely different for me. You know, I've done so many different things, like period things and stuff that's in armor and chainmail and whatnot. So this was, you know, going to work and just putting on a jeans and t-shirt was quite different for me.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot in common because I'm a comedian, but I have to take my shirt off a lot. And then people boo me and they want me to put my shirt back on. But, you know, and I'm Italian, so I understand both sides. So I understand about the pasta and the bread, because that's like a big, big thing in our world. So I can imagine, and the food is amazing in Italy. So I can imagine how hard it is to kind of keep your hands off that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I try and like balance it out, you know, so like if I do, I don't like to, I used to restrict myself like completely. I used to like try and just not eat anything. And I actually found that to be quite unhealthy to do that all the time, especially when you're in somewhere like Italy, where, you know, I believe you should really enjoy the food of that culture. So I think it, you know, it's more about portion control and working a little bit harder in the gym the next day.
Yeah. What did I know? You know, you studied acting in college and Rose Bruford College, and I know like you were sort of interested in acting even before that. Like, what was it about acting that sort of said, I don't know. Like for me, I had a whole other career and then I got into comedy, and it's just something kind of, it's hard to explain to people, but something just kind of grabs you inside. I would imagine it's the same for you with acting. Like, how did that sort of come about? And what was that feeling like when you thought, I might want to do this as a job, career?
Yeah, it's like a bug, right? You kind of get the bug, and once you get that and the feeling for it, you kind of want to just do it all over and over again. It's kind of like a, I suppose it's like a drug hit, you know, when you get that high. So I started off in theatre. I got such a high from developing, you know, rehearsing with a team of people. And like, I'm from a sports background as well. So I played rugby and football and cricket and stuff in the UK. And I think I cross over this a lot, you know, because I think having a team background, doing something together as a team is always so much more rewarding than if you do it on your own. You know, I think doing it, winning something with a bunch of guys or girls or whatever is amazing. It's such a good feeling. And going through a rehearsal process and then putting on it on stage, and then you get the laughs, you get like that reaction afterwards. It's amazing. So I ended up going into acting because, I mean, I loved movies since the day I can remember. You know, I've always been watching and been obsessed with various different movies. And it always seemed like a bit of a pipe dream, you know, to actually do movies. I just sort of started off at the bare minimum with going to like your local youth theatre or doing a drama class at school. And then it gradually just became everything I did. You know, like I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and then I got into drama school, and I sort of saw each next sort of step as like another challenge of like, oh, well, it's going to be so hard to get into drama school, but I'll try it anyway. And then it's going to be so hard to get an agent and get jobs, but you know, screw it. Let's give it a go and give it my all. And I've just been very fortunate, man, that like every opportunity that I've for the next sort of challenge, I've just sort of thought, okay, that's my next challenge in my career. And I'm just going to go for it and give it my all. And I'm so fortunate that I've had, you know, the career I've had so far, you know, I'm very grateful for it. It's been amazing.
Do you think the discipline, I mean, the kind of sports you did and at the level you did them, there's obviously discipline, working with other people, realizing that you're only as, it's a cliche, but it's true, you're only as good as your weakest link. Did that sort of, you are, and obviously in the way you have to prepare for roles that you've done, not just, you know, in terms of the acting, but, you know, diet and working out at these incredible levels, like there's a discipline that you have. Did you have that early on as a young kid? Were you always pretty focused? Because to do what you just did, like I don't think people understand who aren't in the entertainment business. I think some people think, yeah, you just kind of roll out of bed and you go act and then you party all night in Hollywood, or you go, in my case, write, you know, smoke some weed, write a few jokes, and then go tell some jokes. They don't understand the discipline to be good at your craft, to be able to deal with the rejection in your craft. Where did that sort of work ethic come from? And you know, like all of us, I'm sure you've been rejected as you've gone through this process. How have you been able to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the discipline thing, I think, is something that comes more with time. And I think that, you know, I very early on realized I needed to stand out. So I tried to like brand myself. You know, I was like, what am I here? Like, what am I putting myself out there? It's like, you know, people talk about, oh, I want to be an actor. But I'm like, yeah, but what's the thing that I'm going to be that's going to stand me aside from anyone else? So the first thing I thought, well, I'm bigger and taller than most people. And I you know, I'm hoping that I can act something. Well, there's not many guys out there that are like my kind of size and everything. So I was like, well, I need to kind of hone in on that. So I decided to, yeah, like really hit the gym hard. And so when I walk in a room, you know, I look a certain way. And there was the odd few roles that popped up that were kind of like right for me that I managed to get. So that kind of got my headway, you know. And I think the discipline side of it, like I've always done that. Like I've always been the one that if people go out and party all night, I'll go back home a little bit earlier so I can go and train in the morning before work the next day. Or you know, I'll be a little bit more disciplined with my food. I feel there is like a slight element of sacrifice, but at the same time, I'm always looking at things in terms of the long term. I don't really think of like short term gain. I think of like short-term discomfort in order to get long-term gain. And that's the way I've always thought about a lot of these things, because, you know, people talk about, you know, like a minute on the lips, last time on the hips. That's like a very cliche way of saying it. But I mean, I think, well, you know, if I'm going to look a certain way, I'll go into the gym for 45 minutes to an hour. Yes, that might be painful because it doesn't feel great in the moment because I've, you know, been out that night, but I'll feel the benefit later on. I'll benefit from going for that run or whatever down the line. So I'm always looking at things in that way, like a long-term gain. I suppose it is, there is a huge amount of like discipline, I think. Yeah, I think to set aside yourself, I mean, it's a highly, highly competitive industry. And like you were talking about rejection before, I don't really look at it like rejection. I think of it more as part of the journey. And anytime that you get a no, you know, I think you have to see it as, oh, well, that they didn't want my version of that character. You know, I've done chemistry reads with like actresses and stuff before, actors. And every single one of those people that I've read opposite were amazing. Like, it's nothing to do with their talent. It's that whoever's making that movie or a project didn't want their version of it. And I think the sooner you don't think of it as rejection and you think of it as like, oh, it's not right for their version of it, they didn't want your version of that character, then it all becomes part of the job.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I've also, you know, because I also act, I mean, not at your level in terms of my credits, but I totally get what you say. But the other thing is that I've had to come to realize there's sort of a bigger plan maybe for us, right? So like, okay, Tom, you were great for that, but you weren't, I'm your agent talking to you, right? You didn't get the part, right? Whatever. And then you could either process that as beat yourself up or whatever, which I've done in the past, but I don't do so much anymore, or that's not where I'm supposed to be at this point in time, given the destiny that the universe has out there for me. And maybe that's a healthy way to look at it too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think in the acting career, you know, I think the sooner you get on top of that and you don't get bummed out when you don't job, you're like, because the thing is, I always say to people who get bummed out, I'm like, well, you've got a whole career of that feeling if that's the way you're going to take it. You know, like, you have to be able to enjoy the journey and realize that, well, that's not right for me right now, but there'll be something else around the corner. If you're bummed out about every job you don't get, well, that's 90% of the jobs you go for.
Right. Right. It's a pretty miserable life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why are you doing this then? Because that's part of it. So you're just better off finding acceptance in that and enjoying it. And then when you get the highs, you can, they're even better.
Yeah.
So you just have to really, I mean, it's very easy to say that, you know, like if, you know, you do get the job. I know there's people out there that just keep going and going and going, and it's always no. And that's really difficult. You know, I say it from a place that I've been extremely fortunate to have gotten some yeses. But I do believe that if you're an actor, then, and you want to be a happy person, I mean, there's a lot of mental health issues in our industry. And I actually work with a lot of people in like certain charities and stuff that deal with that, to deal with mental health, because it is a big part of it, because of, like you say, a lot of rejection and things like that. But I think that is a huge way of dealing with it, is to try and accept it. It's like, you know, sales, you know, you could call it cold calling as sales. How many times when you cold call someone and you get in a sale? Probably right. One in every 50 to 100 calls. Well, you can kind of see it like that. It's like, it's part of the job.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you said something interesting about sort of taking on certain roles. You said there's something about being cerebral, intellectual, and yet emotionally repressed and being a villain. If you think someone's doing this bad stuff and they're in complete control, that's more scary than if they're out of control. Explain that a little bit. I never thought of it that way, but it makes a lot of sense. And how did you kind of arrive at that?
Yeah. What was that for? What was I saying?
It was from an article I read on you. You had a few interesting things. You also said a British villain never loses their sense of humor was another thing you said in an interview. And but it was, you know, the idea of the first quote was like sort of, I guess, playing a villain or a madman or whatever, like kind of as a crazy person, like really emotionally like off the charts, is not as interesting or scary as if you kind of repress a lot of that and it's trying to ooze out. And as I was reading that, I was like, yeah, I think about some of the more interesting villains I remember, and it's always, they're quiet in the way they're letting their instrument be.
Yeah. And also I believe that any, you know, any great villain is the hero of their own story. You know, like I believe that no villain truly believes they're a villain if they're good, you know, and I don't think doing anything just for the sake of being a villain. And that's what one thing I remember being told in drama school very early on was, don't play the villain, don't tell the audience that you're the villain, because the villain should feel justified in what he's doing. And whether it's like heightened because of ego, you know, there's certain characters in our real life that people see as the villain. You know, Trump by a lot of people was seen as the villain, but he fully believes he's doing the right thing. But because he's got an ego and he's very brash in the way he does it, like he's seen as like the villain by a lot of people. But yeah, I do believe that like anyone that's out of control as a villain, I sort of think, well, I'm not really scared of that. I want to see someone that's capable of doing very bad things, but they're absolutely in control of their narrative, you know, and their, whatever the reason is they're doing it, whether it is ego, whether it's, you know, love is a big one. Me and my friends talk about, you know, that what people will do in for love of something, whatever that is, whether it's world domination, the idea of having everything under your power, you know, like it's, people do crazy things, but ultimately those supervillains are deeply controlled. They know exactly what they're doing and calculate it.
That's totally true. And as you say that, you're right. I mean, anybody that's a villain or anybody that's sort of gone off the rails in their mind truly believes that what their mission is or what they're doing is justified. And they've somehow, no matter how warped that justification is, it's a true justification for them, right? So that's a really good point. And when you were doing the film Love in the Villa, so were there any sort of, I mean, I would imagine if you do similar, not that the rules are similar, but if you're doing sort of a couple of action films back to back or sort of intense kind of bigger pictures back to back, and then you're doing what I'll call I don't mean smaller in a pejorative way, but you know, like a Love in the Villa is not a big action film. As an actor, were there some adjustments going in? Were there some habits you had to get yourself out of in playing the role in Love in the Villa versus, you know, Black Sails or the Umbrella Academy or whatever?
I think the sensible thing to do is to approach every job completely uniquely, right? And you almost like as an actor, you go in almost like not a blank canvas, because you're drawing something from yourself in every role, I believe. But I think you approach it from that character's truth and the truth of the story that you're in and the what you're bringing to life. So you, because I went and shot Love in the Villa straight after finishing season 3 of Umbrella Academy. So I, you know, I've been playing an American big goofball Luther through, you know, season 3.
Right.
And Charlie in Love in the Villa is completely different. So there is an element of literally having to drop that character, just literally drop them. And then go, right, there's a whole new one here. Who's this guy? And start all over again. So I don't think, I mean, I'm sure there are like habits and stuff that you take in which you don't, you're not aware of. But from the point of view of approaching the role, I don't really think about any habits I might have or anything. I just try and like drop everything and look at it as a whole new person, which they are, you know.
Right, right. Well, it's a really interesting premise too, because this woman takes a trip to Verona, Italy, and she's her villa's been double booked and kind of forced to share a vacation with you, and you play a cynical guy, which is kind of a nice, I thought, you know, as a fan of yours and a viewer, sort of a little departure too, to see you as cynical was like a different kind of way to see you, you know?
Yeah, it is. It was a different role for me as well. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. You know, it's funny you say about the premise, because the premise of the story is actually based on truth, because Mark Steven Johnson, the director, writer-director, had this actually happen to him in Paris. And he got to an Airbnb and ended up sharing the Airbnb with some random female stranger. Didn't quite go the same way in terms of a war that ensued in the villa, but it happened.
That's the best stuff, real life. Well, it's a terrific new film. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on all the success. And hopefully we'll have you on again, and we'll talk again soon. And I know you're always keeping your eye on your workout regimens and your weight. And I saw too that you, at one point, you said you went too far and you were getting cranky and yelled at your wife, and she had to put you in your place. And it, you know, you reminded me of me when I get hungry and then I get cranky and all that stuff. So you're human like the rest of us, I guess.
How,
right?
To control the hunger. That's the key.
That's exactly right. It's like, I think she brought you the wrong treats or something. I was reading a Men's Journal and an article you talked about that, and I,
right, yeah.
And I'm like, it sounds like me with my wife.
The moment when I realized, oh no, this is a terrible diet that I'm on, and I've got to look at myself here, you know. Like, it was when I was on the black sales diet, and they put us on this crazy, like, no carb, no fat, literally just chicken and broccoli, all the boring stuff. And that was the impetus for me to go, I can't do this. You know, I can't maintain. I've got to find a way to eat food that's delicious and it be good for you and maintain this kind of physique. And that's what I started doing. I just went deep into cooking and got so into it.
Yeah.
And that's how you create the consistency, right? Is by finding a way that works for you.
Yeah, you need to be happy in doing it. Are you still eating a lot of your gummy bears? I know that's one of your favorite snacks. You still.
I'm not the same brand, although I did come across a brand of gummy bear sweets called Smart Sweets in the States. Oh. And they're sweetened with monk fruit. So they're... Mm-hmm. And they're all natural gummy sweets. So I was like, oh, I can get my gummy sweet hit again. Because the thing is, all that stuff that I wanted to kind of like binge on, like all that horrible sugary stuff, it's terrible for you. And when you eat all that, when you've been on a crash diet, you have the most horrendous sugar spike, a blood sugar spike. And then it makes you even worse the next day. And you have like a sugar hangover. Like, all those things are so bad for you. So for me, I was like, I've got to find the healthy alternative here. I've got to find something that, like you say, like, keeps you happy.
Yeah.
And gives you like that kind of like dopamine hit of like, oh my God, this tastes amazing.
Right.
But it's got it from like a healthier source. So, yeah, I love that stuff.
Well, I got to tell my wife about those Smart Sweets, because she's a big gummy bear person. So I'll pass it on. And
oh my God. Yeah. The Smart Sweets are amazing. And because they have them all in the States. So when I'm in the States, I always like stock up, because my kids love them as well.
Cool. Well, listen, it's really great to talk to you and get to know you. And next time you got something going on, let's get you back on and talk some more. And really congrats on all the success. Love in the Villa is the film that's out now on Netflix. Tom Hopper, great to have you on, man.
Thanks so much, bro. I appreciate it.
All right. That was Tom Hopper. I hope you enjoyed it. I really enjoyed having him on. Hope to see you guys on the road. PaulMercurio.com. For tickets, I'm again, all over the place. So come on out, see some shows, have a few laughs, and don't ask me for a tip, because I'm not going to tip you. See you next week, everybody.